Welcome to Kelby One-on-One, 10 questions with Richard Burnaby. Hi, I'm Scott Bourne, your host for today's show, and we have the pleasure of welcoming internationally known travel, landscape, and wildlife photographer Richard Burnaby, who is a Kelby One instructor. Thanks for making time for us, Richard.
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Scott. Thank you for having me.
We are all about making sure people know that Kelby One trainers are top flight. And what I want to talk about first with you is I know that you travel a big bunch. In fact, you made time to do the show with us. Where are you going next and what are you going to do there?
Okay, well, I actually have a flight tomorrow morning to Buenos Aires in Argentina. And from there, I'll be headed down to Calafate and spending 2 weeks in the southern Andes of Patagonia. Wow. And actually have a photography tour there. I'll be meeting my crew on Sunday and spending a couple weeks. And then I have a little bit of me time immediately after that to do a little bit of personal shooting. So it's one of my favorite places in the world. I've returned to Patagonia. This is, I think, my 10th or 11th or 12th time. I've lost count. But the fact that I keep going back should be an indication that it's a place that's very near and dear to me. Not near. It's dear.
I was going to say, you got to really want to go to Patagonia.
Yeah, you do. It's worth it. Totally worth it.
So how do you find clients for all this incredible work that you do? And, of course, our audience will be able to find you through links on the interview. But you do some fantastic work, but it's in far-flung places. How do you find clients that help you support this work?
Well, I may approach my work backwards in that I see things that interest me, whether it be through other people's work or images on the internet or magazines. And if it's something that inspires me, or I think it's a place that would inspire me, I go. I just go to explore it on my own and see what it has to offer and how it affects me on an emotional level and how it inspires my work. And then if there's people interested in my work or interested in the location and my interpretation of it, then I'll either, offer a particular tour there, or people will buy images as far as prints or through stock or other means. But I don't have a strategy when I go to a place as to how I'm going to make money doing it. It's a place that I want to do, a place where I want to go, and then the business will follow that. The place.
So you're essentially self-funding your expeditions on the bet that someone will come later to make that all work out.
That's right.
I think that's very admirable. Now, you just said something that many of the great instructors here on Kelby One have said to me in one way or another. And I think it's a theme that particularly I want our younger photographers to take hold of. You mentioned the word emotion. Mm-hmm. And young people are fairly fixated on gear acquisition syndrome. But once you're into the genre quite a bit and you've done photography and you've been around, you know what's going on. If you're a heavy hitter like you, it seems that you bring that word emotion up. Talk a little bit about how emotion factors into your work.
Well, I'm often asked about, what kind of a genre I do or what's my specialties. And I always say that my specialty is things that inspire me. So my job is to go out and be inspired and go to places and see things that inspire me so that I create images that inspire others, but having an emotional connection to it is really the first step in the image creation, at least for me it is. So if I go to a place and I may have to spend a little time, but once I connect to it on an emotional level, I want to create images that inspire other people and move other people. In order for that to happen, I have to be inspired myself. I can't fake it. I can't go out and be nonplussed about a place or a subject and then somehow get people to be inspired and feel something about it. I have to feel it first. But I always felt that images that make people feel something are the ones that are going to be successful. There's nothing wrong with gear. You need gear to do photography, and to be able to execute it in a technically proficient way is also important. But technically perfect images or technical proficiency is not going to carry the image, at least not in this competitive world in which we work. The images have to move people. They have to move people to want to buy the product that maybe the image is representing, or it has to move people to want to travel there, or has to move people to buy print or whatever it may be. I think connecting on an emotional level, or at least striking an emotional chord with the ultimate viewer, is what makes really makes an image successful. And I've heard that over and over and over again when it came to art buyers or photo editors of magazines. They always said, we'll accept an image that's inferior or even lacking the technical proficiency if it grabs somebody by the heart. And that's what they're looking for. And I think if there is a lesson to be learned by younger photographers, is to look for that that connection. And it starts with photographing the things that you have an emotional connection to and that they're inspired by.
That's so great. Yeah, I mean, I look at the photographs of the 1960s in Life and Look magazine. Today's internet forums would shred them because there's blown out highlights or they're not perfectly in focus. Those speed graphics that they used to photograph the Muhammad Ali fight weren't exactly good with autofocus.
No, and if you look, you go through National Geographic in 1960s and 70s, they weren't technically perfect, but that's not why they were selected. They're selected because obviously the photo editor who saw them, they looked at them and they moved them in some way, and they thought that it would also inspire their readers. And that's the first key. Obviously, you want both.
Right.
You want emotionally inspired images that are technically executed, but the first key is getting those heartstrings and getting them in the heart first, and then the rest kind of fall in line.
So how important is the role of social media for you in sharing your work?
Well, it's been huge. It really has. I've been in the business professionally for about 15 years. And when I started, I was doing things the old way, you know, selling stock images and slides and transparencies and sending them off to magazines and doing some writing as well. But with the explosion of digital and then social media, the whole landscape changed as far as the business and enabled me to reach so many more people. I've fully embraced the whole social media movement. And oftentimes when I'm traveling, I'm able to share images and share even short video clips taken with my phone real time with my followers. And they're coming along with me on these trips. And that establishes a relationship with them. And that's important as a, you know, any brand will tell you that establishing a relationship with your customers is key to keeping them.
Okay, that's really, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about how much things have changed since I'm an older guy. I've been doing this back when we used to send slides to New York and wait for an answer.
Yeah,
it's just such a radical change how someone can discover you on the internet and all of a sudden you're booked. And I think one of the things I've noticed about your work, Rich, because you do go to these far-flung places like Patagonia, and let's face it, not everybody gets that opportunity. You do provide some opportunity for folks to be what I call aspirational photographers. They can look at what you've done and see themselves there someday. I think that's an incredibly important role that I never hear talked about. Do you ever stop to think about how your work is influencing new photographers and maybe motivating them to do what you do?
Absolutely, particularly with places like Patagonia. I'm not saying I'm one of the first to go there. A lot of people went there before I did. But I kind of pushed a lot of those images on social media back in, you know, 2009, 2010, 2011. And at the time, there wasn't many people going there. And I used to have a lot of these places to myself in many ways. Now I see a lot more photographers. And at first, my initial reaction, I think it would be the same as a lot of people, was, you know, I wish it was back when I had these places to myself. But then I would have somebody walk up to me while I was there. They would recognize me and they say, you know what? You're the reason why I'm here today. Those images that you posted, that I've got your ebooks, or I saw your article in Popular Photography, or I follow you on Twitter and Facebook. Those images that you posted on these trips, that's the reason why I'm here. And then to prove it, they pull their phone out and they have my images on their phone. Said, I'm here to get these shots.
That's awesome.
And yeah, you know what? I guess it's worth it, because if you can inspire somebody in any way, it makes it all worthwhile. So I don't mind at all. I take it as a huge compliment.
I'd have to say, Richard, you've arrived when that started to happen. Now, I know we do these shows and the real important stuff is the things we've talked about, but you're right, gear is required. So tell us what you shoot with, pick one or two of your favorite lenses and tell us why.
Okay, well, I shoot Canon. I have two 5D Mark IVs and a 1D X Mark II. So my two favorite – I would pick my two favorite lenses would be for wildlife, the 2-400 Canon with the 1.4 teleconverter built in. It's an amazing lens. Amazing engineering that went into this lens. I can't imagine how smart these people are who developed them. But to have that range of basically 200 to 560 in the lens, when you go out to Africa and you're in a safari vehicle, you can't zoom with your feet. Yeah. It's this invaluable lens. It's one of my favorite lenses. And then on the other side of the spectrum would be the new Canon 11-24. And at first when I bought it, I almost bought it on a lark. I thought it was kind of an esoteric lens or a specialty lens, and that maybe I'd use it once in a while. I mean, 11 millimeters, what am I going to do with 11 millimeters?
That's pretty wide.
I started finding images with it.
Yeah.
I would – even going to places as a landscape photographer, I would revisit places over and over again and thought there's no other compositions here. But when you have 11 millimeters, it's a whole new way of seeing, and you bring in elements into the scene that you couldn't bring in before. You've got new compositions. You've got new images. I'm going back to places that I've gone over and over the past 10 years and come up with new material. So, and it's amazingly sharp, and it's built like a tank. I dropped it off a 60-foot – off the north window in arches down 60-foot Sanson arch. And it actually worked. I mean, it was a little tight on the zoom ring, but it actually got me through the rest of the trip until I was able to send it in and get it fixed. But it's sharp. It's got a really interesting range as far as if you like working with wide-angle lenses. So if I were to pick two that are right now my favorites, that would be my two favorites right there.
It's interesting how sometimes a lens can inspire vision.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
With 11-24, I started finding new uses for it because I never you don't see that way. You just
right.
You've always been constrained maybe by 15 or 16 millimeters, and all of a sudden the difference between 15 or 16 millimeters to 11 millimeters doesn't sound like a lot, but trust me, it's a lot.
All right, we have time for one more question. This okay. has been great. I'd like to know if you have any tips for aspiring landscape travel photographers that want to do what you do. What's like the first thing you did wrong that you want to teach them not to do?
Well, I mean, my first bit of advice, and we kind of went over this, is always if you want to make a profession out of this, is do it for love. Do it because this is a passion. You it's almost like you don't have any choice.
Right.
You just have to do this. If you think you're going to do this for the money, for many different reasons, they're not the right reason to do it. Come in with just a passion for what you do. If you whatever it is you're going to go shoot, you're going to have an amazing passion for it. You've got something to share with the rest of the world that other people don't, because you may have a unique insight into whatever that passion is, whether it be landscapes or wildlife or horses or flowers or whatever it may be. Because it's your passion, the subject matter, you have something unique to share with the world, and you need to pursue that for not only your own sake, but for myself. I like looking at images. I want to see other people's vision. And you could tell when someone has a real passion for their subject matter. And I know I appreciate it. And you know that if you make that your goal, then you're going to be successful, at least on some level. And that's usually what I suggest people do.
Very good advice. Where can people find you, Richard, when you're not hanging out at Kelby One-on-One podcast or over the Kelby training site?
Sometimes I'm traveling just for the sake of traveling. Sometimes I'm home. I live in South Carolina. Just kind of relaxing and taking it easy. It's when you have a trip of a week or several weeks or a month or sometimes several months, it really takes a lot out of you. And it sometimes takes several days to recover when you get home.
So when you're at home, is that when you get on social media, and do you have any sites you'd like people to visit you at?
Oh, yeah, my website, richardburnaby.com. I'm probably most active on Twitter, and it's just Burnaby Photo. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, but haven't gotten to Snapchat yet. But those are the basic ones, and that's kind of when I get caught up, and that's about it.
All right. Well, listen, thanks so much for taking time with us today. I'm Scott Bourne. I'll be back next week with another great instructor from the Kelby Network. You're listening to the Kelby One-on-One podcast.